He guides me down onto him, sinking all the way into me. Steady is the last word I'd use to describe what I'm feeling. Good God, this man fits inside me so perfectly, like his body was made to fit into mine. Two interlocking puzzle pieces finally coming together. My heart beats an uneven rhythm as I ride him, grinding my hips against his until I feel a wild heat building between my legs. Halt, I say on a gasp. I'm close. His fingers sink into the small of my back, pressing me tight against the curve of his length.
Me too, baby,
he says softly.
Come for me.
I kiss him then, and with one last tilt of his hips, pleasure rolls through me in hot, wild waves. He's only moments behind me, releasing into me as he groans my name. It's sweet and glorious on his lips.
Eden.
Like the most perfect prayer.
Chapter 26. Holt. Things between Eden and me are effortless, like running downhill. It's just easy. Over the past few weeks, we've gone out on dates, hung out together at her place and at mine, cooked, watched movies, talked. I've rubbed her feet while she worked on her laptop, and we've had a lot of sex. Definitely no complaints there. But I've noticed something else. I'm starting to feel things I have no right to. Eden isn't my girlfriend. We aren't dating. So why do I have a whole bunch of ideas that seem way too domestic and couple-y for what we're doing? Things like nights spent in bed, talking and cuddling, and making love as many times as we can before my body gives out on me. Going to movies and walking on the beach. The only time I listen to my loud, angry music anymore is when I'm working out, since I no longer need an angsty soundtrack to my life. On one hand, everything has changed, but on the other, nothing has, because we haven't actually spoken about our relationship yet. It's something I intend to change, but I don't want to spook Eden. I know she's only months off a bad and very public breakup, and she's given me no indication that she's in the market for another serious relationship. She sleeps over at my place and lets me hold her. She cooks for me and texts me during the day, but that doesn't mean she's ready to be someone's girlfriend again.
Do you want to swing by the store on the way home? Eden asks, interrupting my thoughts. I'd like to get the ingredients for a recipe I saw online.
Home. I love that she refers to wherever we're staying together as home. I nod.
Sure.
We went for coffee this morning after sleeping in. Well, I got coffee. Eden got some fancy latte thing that I can't even begin to pronounce. We've spent the last few weekends like this, doing mundane things together, but I'm happy. Happier than I've ever been. After the grocery store, she says she has library books to return, so we swing by there and are now back at her place. I unload the grocery bags while Eden locates the recipe on her phone.
Does this look good to you?
She asks. It's something called shakshuka. I have no idea what that means. We picked up eggs, goat cheese, tomato sauce, and a crusty loaf of bread. At the time, I didn't see how they could all be combined into one recipe together. To be honest, I still don't. I'll eat anything you make for me, I say, pressing a kiss to her temple. Eden smiles and gets to work, preheating the oven and instructing me on how to crumble the goat cheese while she works on the tomato sauce. She tells me about the origin of the dish as we cook. It's North African, contains poached eggs and a spicy tomato sauce, and can be eaten for brunch or dinner. By the time she slides the cast iron skillet into the hot oven, I'm no longer skeptical. It's starting to smell damn good in here. While we were cooking, her phone rang a few times, but she ignored it, seeming annoyed. But when it vibrates against the counter again, I can't help but be curious. I don't want to be insecure, just want to be sure she's okay. Any particular reason you're ignoring your calls today? I glance over at her. She takes a deep breath.
It's Alex, and I have nothing to say to him.
I can't help but wonder if he calls her often. Maybe they're still in touch. Hell, maybe they're well on their way to becoming best friends again. But I know I can trust Eden, so I do, putting it out of my mind. When the food is ready, it looks amazing. Bubbling sauce with soft cooked eggs that we eat with generous hunks of crusty bread. I'm no longer thinking about her ex at all when we settle onto the couch together after our brunch. I pull Eden close and she lets out a soft sigh.
What should we do today?
She asks. I have an idea. I press a kiss to the side of her neck and she chuckles at my lame seduction attempt.
Oh, do you now?
Yes. I lift Eden from her spot beside me and settle her onto my lap. Her knees are on either side of my hips, causing her warm center to rest right over my quickly hardening manhood. Her eyes sink closed, and she kisses me slowly, as if she wants to savor this moment between us. I'm on the exact same page. I love being here with her like this, where we don't have to hide away or pretend we're not involved. Eden shifts her hips, eliciting a harsh pant from my lips. I work my hands under her shirt and lift it over her head. I've just filled my hands with the soft weight of her breasts when there's a brief knock at the front door. Her worried gaze snaps to mine. I'm about to ask her if she's expecting someone when the door suddenly opens.
Eden, you home?
Alex's voice cuts through the pounding sound of my heart. Eden tumbles from my lap, clutching her shirt to her chest as Alex rounds the corner and comes into view. He stops suddenly, pausing in the entryway as he takes us in, both of us flushed and standing beside the couch, Eden in her bra and frantically trying to cover herself.
Alex!
She almost shouts the word. What are you doing here? He raises both hands, then his eyebrows jump in surprise.
Holt?
You'd better start talking, Braun. Frustration laces my voice, and I take a couple of steps closer to him.
Security buzzed me in. Maybe they thought Eden and I still...
His words bounce around in my head. It doesn't explain why he's here, but imagining a scenario in which the building security thought Alex was still on the list of people Eden would invite into her condo isn't something I want to think about too hard. I'll have that problem corrected as soon as possible, and see to it that the person responsible is terminated for negligence. Eden ducks behind me and quickly slips on her shirt. Then faces Alex.
What are you doing here?
Alex doesn't answer. His features twist into a scowl, and his hands tighten into fists at his sides.
So, you two are hooking up now?
His voice is rough, as though he's swallowed glass. Or maybe it's just the realization that Eden and I are an item that's a bitter pill to swallow.
That's none of your concern,
Eden says, straightening her posture, and I place one hand on her shoulder. Alex scoffs.
This guy? Really, Eden?
Be careful, Braun, I warn. Something about the way Alex is looking at her sets my skin on fire. His eyes are filled with pain and regret, and something else I can't quite put my finger on. He shakes his head, looking down for a moment.
I always thought there was something between you two. Convinced myself I was imagining it. Because, hello, Eden Wynn and Holt Rossi? Nowhere on planet Earth does that make sense. But fuck, what do I know?
His words sting like only the truth can.
Leave, Alex,
Eden says, her voice shaky. I take another step closer. Braun, I'm warning you. Listen to her or you're going to regret this.
Fuck you, Rossi. Fuck both of you.
Alex practically hurls his words at us, but when he takes a step closer to Eden, that's when I lose it. I throw the first punch and have him down on the floor and restrained before he can react. He struggles against my hold.
Let me go, asshole!
He hisses, thrashing against my firm grip.
I wasn't going to touch her, I was going to hand her this.
I look down at his hand. He's holding a gold watch.
Let him go, Holt.
Eden says, sounding drained and exhausted already from this 15-second exchange. I release him. And Alex is on his feet before I can barely take two steps back. Alex extends his hand, holding the watch toward Eden.
It was an anniversary gift,
he says, probably for my benefit.
Take it.
Eden looks uncertain, more confused than I've seen her. Then she shakes her head.
Just keep it, Alex.
I don't want the watch, he says, daring to take another step toward Eden. I know it was your grandfather's. Take it. Finally, she does. Alex blows out a long sigh and then heads for the door. What an asshole. If it were so important for him to return that watch, he could have brought it to practice any day of the week. The door closes, and then we're alone. Eden sets the watch on the counter and spins to face me. Worry lines her features, and I cross the room to take her in my arms, to reassure her. But instead, she's the one checking on me, delicately taking my hand to inspect it. It's in this moment that our story comes full circle. Me with busted knuckles, her tending to them just like all those years ago in college. The significance of this moment isn't lost on Eden. I can see the emotion in her eyes. I'm fine, I say, pressing my lips to her temple. I pull her close, and she rests her head on my chest.
It's crazy how one night can change your whole life,
she murmurs. I squeeze my eyes closed, hard, and fight off an unexpected rush of emotion.
I felt so much for you back then.
She lifts up on her toes and presses her mouth to the stubble along my jaw. When I meet her eyes, I sense there's some unspoken thought on the tip of her tongue. Instead, she just whispers,
I made the wrong choice all those years ago.
We're interrupted when her phone rings again. It better not be Alex. I heave in a deep breath while Eden grabs the phone and checks the caller ID.
It's Les,
she says before answering it. She puts the phone to her ear, and even I can hear the frantic tone in his voice. Eden? I ask when her face falls. She swallows hard and tells Les to give her a second. When she looks at me, it's without any of the tenderness from a moment before.
We have a problem.
Chapter 27. Eden. Holt was at my place yesterday when Les called with the news. I ushered him out with the excuse that a work thing needed my attention. Poor Holt, he believed me. He hadn't yet heard the news, didn't realize that everything between us had just imploded. I promised to call him later, but even as I said the words, I doubted they were true. Somewhere deep inside, I worried things were over between us. For good this time. It's a funny thing to watch your worst nightmares come true. And by funny, I mean shocking and horrible. When I woke up this morning to an onslaught of panicked notifications on my phone, all of which contained links to news and blog articles featuring my name, I knew that I hadn't dreamed it. And yesterday, sending Holt away had only been the tip of the iceberg. I was in for one of the worst days of my life. All it took was one little picture, a shot of me and Holt at Lucian's son's birthday party. Holt's back is to the camera, one arm wrapped around my waist, his hand lingering on the curve of my ass. Meanwhile, my face is clearly photographed and it's turned up toward Holt's with a smile on my lips, looking at him like he hung the damn moon. Out of context, it would be a pretty sweet photo. But plastered on the front page of every hockey gossip blog, it makes my stomach churn and sweat bead on my forehead. Well, fuck me, I guess. The media has spun themselves into a frenzy, speculating that I'm involved with someone on the team, just like they all predicted in the beginning. No one wanted to take a young female owner seriously. After my breakup with Alex, it was suggested that I'd soon move on to another player. My heart slams against my ribs as I scroll through the notifications on my phone, each headline worse than the last. Titans owner gets cozy with unnamed new beau. Wynn scores a goal with Titans employee. Fans see red. Beat it, Braun. New Titans owner spotted getting flirty with favorite new hire. The comment section of every article is a full-blown dumpster fire of fans typing in all caps, insisting that I'm even more of a joke than they first thought. My heart bottoms out to my stomach, which proceeds to sink to my toes. I did the one thing that all the tabloids and gossipy hockey blogs predicted. I fell for someone involved with the team. And now all the fans see is the flirty, unfocused owner they feared I would be, and they want me out. Stat. I can almost feel my career crumbling into dust. I throw my phone to the end of the bed, plunging my face into my pillow and releasing a scream that turns into a sob. Fuck my whole life. I manage to pull myself out of bed and trudge to the kitchen to switch on the coffee pot. I'm going to need a whole lot of caffeine to keep me from crawling back into bed, hiding under the covers, and never showing my face in public ever again. I can't believe this is really happening. One of those absolute worst-case scenarios, and it's happening to me in real time. My phone buzzes in my hand, and every nerve in my body jumps with anxiety. What now? A write-up in the freaking New York Times? When it buzzes again, I work up the courage to look. It's not another text or news notification, though. It's an incoming call from Holt. My stomach lurches, and after a few seconds of consideration, I make the difficult decision to press the ignore button. Yes, this mess affects him, but it affects me more. I'm the one whose face is in the picture, and I'm the one with a career and a family reputation on the line. I need space to process this shitstorm, and as much as I'd like to cry into Holt's shoulder, I'm not sure I deserve to. I'm the one who let my guard down. I knew what the media was capable of, and yet I still went out with him in public. A knock sounds at my door, and I groan, flopping onto my couch. Go away. Holt was right, it turns out. I need to have a talk with building security about who's allowed to come up to my door. I could go away, but then I'd have to dump out this disgusting oat milk latte, and that's a total waste of $5. I perk up a little, both at the familiar voice and the mention of an oat milk latte. It's Gretchen, thank God. That's one shoulder I can cry on all I want without the gossip sites having much to say about it. I force myself up from the couch and let her in, trying to ignore the pitying look in her eyes as she hands me the largest coffee cup I've ever seen in my life. I was in the neighborhood when I saw the news, she says, each individual word sounding like a miniature apology. Are you doing okay? Part of me wants to laugh at that question. Of course I'm not doing okay. My budding relationship just got exposed on every sports blog on the internet, and pissed off fans could come kick down my door at any second. But I don't even have the energy to call her on that bullshit question right now. All my brain capacity is currently dedicated to reminding me that I'm a complete and utter failure. As we settle in on the couch, I blow the steam off my latte, blinking back tears as I explain to Gretchen the backstory behind the picture. We were at a player's kid's birthday party, I say with a sigh. And we were trying to keep the PDA to a minimum. But clearly we weren't trying hard enough. I mean, I thought we'd be safe there. Gretchen nods, her eyes narrowing, and I can practically watch the question forming in her mind. Do you know who took the picture? Maybe you could take legal action against them or something. I shake my head. Any of Lucian's friends or neighbors who were there could have snapped the shot and slipped it to a news outlet for a quick buck. It might have even been one of the catering staff he had there that day. Hell, for all I know, one of the news sites caught wind of a gathering of players and sent a drone. I sink deeper into the couch cushions, half hoping they'll consume me altogether and I'll never have to face the world again. Do you think the witness protection program would turn me away for being too lame? Drink your latte, Gretchen says, gently guiding my cup toward my lips. You always have a better perspective with some caffeine in your system. Without a counter-argument, I take a hefty sip. It's piping hot and burns my tongue a little, but at this point, it sort of feels like I deserve it. What you need is a killer PR team, Gretchen clucks her tongue, folding her arms over her chest. They can smooth all of this over. They'll take the old college flame route, lean into the fact that Holt is an independent contractor for the team, not a direct employee. She rambles on like this for a while, spilling ideas about how to solve this mess that, come to think of it, she's partly responsible for. After all, she's the one who gave me that garbage idea about banging Holt out of my system. But deep down, I know the truth. No matter what advice my best friend did or didn't give me, what happened between Holt and me was inevitable. If I were more of a romantic, I might call it destiny. However you label it, it's not something I ever want to let go of. The late night drives in his car, chasing highway signs and blaring grunge music. The sweet, quiet evenings alone on his balcony, trading bits of our pasts like rookie cards. Every moment with him has been nothing short of perfect. But maybe all good things have to come to an end, just like they did back at Sutton all those years ago. That morning in his bed, tucked in some dim corner of a fraternity house, my fight or flight instinct kicked in and I chose flight. But I never thought I'd have to face that choice with him again.
Hello? E? Are you okay?
It's not until Gretchen squeezes my hand that I realize I've been staring off into space like a sad, lost puppy who doesn't know which way is home. I'm fine. I lie, swallowing the tears gathering in my throat. I think I just need a shower and a little more space to process this. Gretchen nods, her lips firmly pursed together as she reaches for her keys.
I get it. Let me know if there's anything I can do to help, okay?
Short of turning back the clock or complete erasure of the World Wide Web, I don't think there's any saving me now. Chapter 28. Eden. After 2 days of working from home, which really consisted of more panicking and doom-scrolling through comments sections than working, I finally decided to pick up the phone, but only because Les was calling. His voice was so sweet and comforting on the other end of the line, and he didn't even mind waiting while I took a break halfway through the call to cry. Somehow, after 30 minutes of back and forth, he convinced me to come back into the office today. Whether that was a good idea or not remains to be seen. Still, I'm as shaky as a toddler trying out her first pair of skates. I'm no stranger to facing my fears. The past several months have made me an expert in that department. Angry crowds of protesters hardly faze me anymore, and I can confidently look a full professional hockey team square in the eye and speak my mind. But as I stand in the hallway just outside the doors of the Titans corporate office, fear doesn't even begin to describe the cold feeling that's running through my veins. Terror, maybe, mixed with a certain grade of anxiety I've never known. But I've made it this far. No use turning back. Les's words echo in my head, keeping me from running back outside.
Hiding won't help you.
Of all the scary things I've faced since taking over the team, those four little words might be the most frightening of all. Maybe because I know exactly how true they are. I can't hide forever. Which is why I'm here, shaking in my black patent leather pumps just a few steps away from facing my new reality. A reality where everyone in the office, in the city even, knows about me and Holt. The owner of the Titans dating the head of security. How will everyone respond? Anger? Acceptance? Ambivalence, even? I won't know until I step inside. Over the last couple of days at home, I avoided calls from Lucian's wife, Camille, as well as Reeves, Tate, and a handful of other players, which surprised me. Even though I wasn't ready to return their calls, I doubted theirs were calls of condemnation. I imagined they were actually shows of support, which made me feel the tiniest bit better, even if I was only imagining it. Gretchen texted me constantly. My lack of response to her funny memes or encouraging notes didn't seem to stop her. This morning's note assured me that I was a badass with a cute butt. It made me smile, despite how miserable and alone I felt inside. Standing here, ready to face the consequences, I take a deep breath to steady myself. Pushing my shoulders back, I focus on taking one step at a time. Click, clack. I steady my breath to the slow click of my heels against the floor as I push open the office doors. Les is the first to spot me from his desk. His unruly gray eyebrows are like two eager caterpillars leaping up his forehead.
Eden, you're back.
Surprise fills his tone until he schools his eyebrows back into place.
It's great to see you.
Great to be here, I manage to say, reaching into my purse to finger my key ring, a reminder that my car is right outside if I need to get away fast. I run my thumb against my key fob like it's a Buddha belly I'm rubbing for good luck. Let's face it, I'll need it. I turn away from Les for a moment to assess the office. It's not even 8 o'clock yet, so it's only the early crowd so far. The general manager's door is open a crack, a low rumble of discussion leaking out. A meeting is going on in one of our glass-walled conference rooms, and I spy Aspen scuttling around the table, clearly focusing a little too hard on not spilling the tray of coffees she's delivering. It's business as usual here. No major fires or catastrophes as a result of my recent press. Maybe this won't be as big of a disaster as I worried it would be.
Your grandfather would be proud of you, you know.
Les speaks in a hushed tone, but even spoken quietly, those words bring a lump of emotion to my throat. You think so? I say, but I truly doubt that.
I know so. In all the years I worked for Pete, not once did I see him back down from a challenge. Right up until the very end. He didn't go down without a fight.
A small, sad smile pulls at Les's lips.
I knew you were just like him.
Thank you, I whisper, ignoring the tingling sensation building in my throat. I sure hope I am. With a smile, I excuse myself and head to my office, desperate to be out of sight before I get too emotional about my grandpa. But the universe has other plans because as I pass by the general manager's door, it swings open. Price St. James steps out, smiling and oblivious to the fact that I was close to tears mere seconds ago.
Hey, look who's back.
A huge smile breaks out on his face.
I knew you wouldn't be out for long. In fact, I made a bet with one of the D-men about it. Thanks to you, I just won $50.
I force a smile, unsure of how to feel about the players betting on my return, but thankful that Saint was on the right side of that bet. Thanks for your confidence in me, I guess?
No sweat, Eden. Miss Wynn.
His face scrunches up as he shoves a hand through his messy brown hair.
I forget, can I call you Eden in the office, or only when we're hanging out as friends?
I blink up at him, temporarily rendered speechless. If you would have told me 2 months ago that one of the players would refer to me as a friend, I would have bet a lot more than $50 that you were lying, that's for sure. Eden is just fine.
Well, Eden,
he says, emphasizing my name with a wiggle of his brows.
I just wanted to say, I think it's cool as fuck that you and Holt are together. He's a good dude, and you're a cool chick. Perfect match, I say.
I stiffen, all too aware that 3 days of ignored phone calls may have changed my status with Holt, but I'm not about to fill Saint in on that. Instead, I just murmur, thank you.
Of course, but seriously, fuck the media. Those buzzards will rip you apart for anything, but it never lasts. Teddy King from the Seattle Icehawks had a freaking sex tape leak last year, and that dude is still playing. Plus, he's married to some hot lawyer now. Seems like everything worked out for him.
Saint scoffs, shaking his head in disbelief.
A whole damn sex tape. What do you have, one picture with Holt's hand on your ass? You're fine.
My lips pull into a tight frown. I think that only works when that person in question is well-liked to begin with and isn't a woman working against a double standard. Saint only nods.
I can't say anything about the whole being a woman thing, but what I can say is the team is behind you. We like you, and we like what you're doing for the Titans. We've got your back, no matter what, okay?
His words mean more to me than I can say. I only manage a grateful smile while I try not to tear up again. After an awkward side hug, Saint heads for the door, and I finally make it back to my office, sinking into my leather executive chair with a long sigh. I never thought Price St. James would be the one to make me rethink this whole situation, but he made some valid points. I certainly have a lot to consider, not the least of which being where Holt and I stand. It was wrong to ignore his calls, but I needed space to process. Now that he's no longer calling, I wonder if he's given up on me altogether. The thought is almost too much to consider, so I turn my focus toward my email, hoping for a distraction, but it's no use. There's only one thing on my mind. Well, two, if you count both his stormy gray eyes and those big, comforting arms that, when I'm wrapped up in them, I feel like nothing could hurt me. Not 100 hockey blogs or gossip sites. Nothing, so long as I'm with him. That's not something I can let slip away. Not for a second time. With my mind made up, I shove up from my desk, but before I can take even a single step, a familiar figure appears in my doorway and freezes me where I stand.
Good morning, Eden.
The sound of Holt's low, deep voice sends an electric current from my chest to my fingertips. Just the man I was about to go looking for, and now he's here before I could even decide on the right thing to say. I steady my gaze on the company logo stitched onto his polo, hopeful that focusing on something stationary will stop the dizzy feeling rushing to my head. It doesn't, and soon I'm collapsing back into my chair, gripping the armrests. Holt rushes to my side, crouching down to level his face with mine.
Are you okay?
Fine, fine, I murmur, swallowing hard as I wave off his concern. Just lightheaded. I got up too fast or something. Emphasis on the or something. He disappears for a moment to get a glass of water from the staff kitchen, and I gladly gulp it down. It makes sense that I'd be dehydrated. I was too nervous this morning to keep anything down. But now, with Holt's big hand resting on my shoulder and his kind eyes watching closely over me, my nerves have subsided. Like always, I feel safe with him.
How are you feeling?
He finally asks, still watching me with an expression of concern. Better, I say. I should probably eat something soon, but the water helped. Thank you. His laugh is a low, gravelly rumble in his throat.
I meant, how are you feeling about everything else? And, you know.
He pauses, drawing in a breath.
About us.
His voice is thick with emotion, and when I look up at him, his gray eyes are clouded with worry, waiting for my response. I match his question with another. Is there still an us? Holt's dark brows draw together, his forehead wrinkling in genuine confusion.
What are you talking about? Of course there's still an us. That is, if you still want there to be.
Of course I do. I chew my lip, searching for the right words, but nothing I say could fully encapsulate everything I'm feeling. About life, about this team, about him. With a shaky sigh, I finally manage some kind of response. There's just so much to process. He nods, seemingly understanding all the words I'm not saying.
I get it. I was shaken too, but I know this is a much bigger deal for you and your career. I want to respect the space you need to let you handle it.
He gives my hand a squeeze, and I squeeze back extra hard. I think I'd rather handle it together. The air between us lightens and the tension in Holt's shoulders eases.
I think we can do it,
he says, his voice firm.
People have been accepting already. I'm sure we'll get the fans on board too.
My mouth quirks up, then quickly drops when a storm cloud of a thought rolls in. What if they start protesting again?
Then you're lucky you have a damn good security team.
My heart squeezes and the tiniest laugh bubbles past my lips. Yeah, I heard the owner of our security company is a real tough guy.
Not as tough as he used to be.
Holt laces his fingers with mine and guides me to my feet.
I think he developed a bit of a soft spot for the woman he's falling for.
Falling for, huh? His chin dips in a firm nod as he closes what's left of the space between us.
I know what I said. I'm happier with you than I've ever been with anyone, Eden.
He brushes my hair behind my ear, his fingers trailing along the tender skin on my neck. The simplest, smallest touch, and suddenly my heart is rioting in my chest.
Are you happy?
He asks softly. Yes, I whisper back. It's the easiest question I've ever answered. I'm so, so happy with you, Holt. I don't want to have to give this up.
Then don't. This bullshit will pass. We just need a little time.
He pauses, then adds,
and maybe the help of someone who knows something about public relations.
I hold back a laugh. That's what Gretchen said, too. I guess if my best friend and my boyfriend are saying the same thing, I pause, catching what I just said. I mean, not to imply heat spreads from my chest to my cheeks, but Holt just grins, a huge, proud smile that makes his eyes crinkle. I don't think I've ever seen him smile so wide.
Boyfriend? I like the sound of that.
Before I can say another word, he tips my chin upward, lifting my mouth to his in a warm, delicate kiss. Soon, I'm dizzy for a whole new reason. The way this man kisses me, so sure and steady, like he's making a promise with every brush of his lips against mine. And I'm promising right back, holding tight to his shoulders like I'll never let go. Several moments pass like this until I remember my reality, that we're making out in my office. I pull away, my eyes wide and wild as I whisper, "Shit, we shouldn't be doing this at work." But Holt just laughs and pulls me in again.
Who cares? It's not like they don't already know.
Chapter 29. Holt. 1 month later. This was a terrible idea. The worst. Eden and I moved in together a few weeks ago, and we decided to host a Thanksgiving dinner. Many players from the team are here, those without family in the area, and the single guys, anyway. Well, all except Braun. Eden and I both bit the bullet and invited our moms because they hadn't met yet, and frankly, it was something we wanted to just get over with. And so far, it's a little awkward, but Eden and I are suffering through it together.
Oh my God, the turkey!
Eden shouts from the kitchen. Now smelling the smoke, I turn to head in her direction. After a quick glance around the room of our mingling guests, no one seems to notice Eden's panic, so I quietly head for the kitchen to check on her. When I reach the kitchen, thick black smoke billows from the oven door before Eden snaps it shut. When she turns to face me, I can see the frustration and disappointment written all over her face. Her lower lip trembles, and I capture her chin in my hands, touching my thumb to her mouth.
It's totally ruined,
she says with a sigh. Hey, shake it off, sweetheart.
But
I silence her with a kiss. Nothing is ruined. I have a plan. I give her a wink. Just breathe. She draws a deep breath through her nose, and then lets out a little cough, because it really is smoky in here. I unlock and then push open the kitchen window, hoping some air circulation will help.
What's your plan? Order pizza? Nothing's open, Holt. We're screwed.
She throws her hands up dramatically. Eden looks as though she could cry, and I know it's not really about the turkey. I know she wanted today to be perfect. I know she's felt the pressure of having such big shoes to fill ever since her grandfather died. I know she hates disappointing people, and I know she really hates looking like a fool in front of her mother. Which is why I wasn't going to leave anything to chance today, or let anything go wrong. She has to be reminded that, as I've told her on more than one occasion, I'll always protect her.
Holt?
she says, her tone pleading. I press a quick kiss to her pouting mouth. Okay, so I saw this flyer for that fancy grocery store down the block you like.
Fleischmann's?
Her eyebrows push together. I nod. That place, yeah. They were advertising whole roasted turkeys on Thanksgiving. I ordered one, just in case.
Okay, this might be worse than me burning the turkey. You knowing I was going to fail is so much worse.
Frowning, I shake my head. That's not what this is. Her eyes widen and lock onto mine.
Then how can you possibly explain this?
She plants her hands on her hips. I give her shoulders a squeeze. I know how much hockey players eat. I was only thinking, in case we needed more food. You know, like the pizza that you had to order the last time you had these guys over.
Oh.
She softens, her mouth lifting in a smile.
Oh, that was... Thank you. That was probably a good idea.
I grin back at her. It's the truth.
But how do we...
I silence her with another quick kiss, because it's just really damn satisfying being her knight in shining armor right now. Aspen is picking it up on her way over. She'll be here any minute, and everything's fully cooked, so we'll just have to plate it.
Everything?
Her eyebrows lift again. I shift my weight. So I actually got 2 turkeys, 3 more pumpkin pies, and a side of mashed potatoes. Her eyes widen.
Is that all?
I shrug, giving her a sheepish look. And a ham. Extra gravy. And 2 dozen garlic rolls. She laughs.
Oh my god, you're insane, but I love you.
I love you too. Eden looks at her kitchen island, gesturing to the food set out there.
But I baked 6 apple pies and 2 pumpkin-
I know, sweetheart. Again, it's just in case. Hockey players eat like 6,000 calories a day during the season. She should know this. After all, she's the one who once told me that factoid. Eden rolls her eyes and crosses the kitchen to turn off the oven. I take a moment to check out her ass. It's a wonderful sight, what can I say? When Aspen arrives a few minutes later, I distract Eden's mom with some riveting questions about her Shih Tzu's diet. More than I ever wanted to know. While Eden and Aspen shuffle quietly into the kitchen to remove all the food from the plastic and tin containers and onto serving platters. A few minutes later, we're all seated at 2 long tables that have been set up in the living room and decorated by Eden herself. Last week, she called me incredibly excited on her way home from a craft store where she'd found fake pine branches, autumn leaves, miniature pumpkins, pine cones, and a whole bunch of white votive candles that she somehow turned into a professional-looking centerpiece for each table. It's very impressive. I'm next to Eden, and our moms are across the table from us, still chatting away. This time the topic is the best place to get a manicure. The guys are scattered around the 2 tables. It's no shocker that Alex isn't here. We're not on bad terms with him, but let's just say things are still awkward. Wild takes the seat next to Eden's, and Les and Aspen are across from him. Saint pulls out the chair beside mine, and once everyone has found a place, Eden stands and clasps her hands in front of her.
You guys,
she says, laughing unexpectedly.
Who knew we'd be here together?
A few of the guys laugh. I know she doesn't mean here physically eating Thanksgiving dinner together, but here in these deep relationships, these friendships and team camaraderie that is formed so unexpectedly. She's right. Everyone has grown close this season, and it's all because of her. It's obvious the team shares a deep bond that's allowed them to rise to the top of their division. And as for me, Eden is my whole world. And that's the last thing I expected when I walked in her office that day after accepting a new assignment. But let's just say I have a lot to be thankful for this year.
I'm truly blessed to call this team my own, and I'm thankful you all chose to be here spending the day with me. Cheers, everyone.
Eden raises her water glass in a toast.
Cheers, and happy Thanksgiving,
is echoed around the room. And then a couple of the players stand. At first, it's just Saint and Reeves, followed by Lucian, Miles, and Tate. And then everyone is standing, all 9 of the hockey players here today, and they're all looking at Eden. I expected them to dig into their food the second her toast was done, But instead, everyone is unnervingly silent, and I'm not sure what's happening. Saint runs one hand over the back of his neck, looking a little sheepish.
The guys and I came up with something we wanted to say.
He nods to Reeves. Reeves begins with a confident smile.
E is for the encouragement you've provided since day one.
D is your determination. It's second to none,
Lucian says in a serious tone, giving Eden a meaningful look. I find her hand under the table and squeeze it. Her eyes are wide, and there's a slight smile on her mouth, but she also looks surprised, like this is the last thing she was expecting.
E is for the excellence you demand in everything you do,
sings Tate.
And N is for your no-bullshit attitude, which we appreciate too,
Miles says, getting a few laughs from around the table.
There's no one else we'd want at the helm. And to this, I say Kung Fu,
Saint finishes.
Kung Fu?
Wild asks.
I needed something to rhyme with too,
Saint whispers, which gets a few chuckles.
To Eden,
everyone shouts at once. I raise my glass in a toast to her and then lean over to steal a kiss. I think your hockey team just wrote you a poem. Tears glisten in Eden's eyes when she gazes at me and nods.
I think so too.
Even Eden's mom looks stunned by their thoughtful display.
I love you all, but you're jerks for ruining my mascara.
Eden laughs, wiping her eyes with her cloth napkin. The guys chuckle, some calling out,
We love you too.
Now eat, she orders them with another shaky laugh. And they do. Everyone digs in with gusto. I can barely keep up with carving the turkeys, and the ham is gone before I can even blink. In addition to playing a rather rousing game of hockey, these guys have an impressive talent for making food disappear. Camille and Lucian ask about a few of the dishes they're not familiar with. The sweet potato casserole with marshmallows seems to amuse them, though Lucian dishes out a second helping for himself, grinning as he eats.
It's good.
The pies are sliced and coffee is served, and everything is delicious. By some miracle, we have plenty of pie. As I glance around the room, seeing Eden at the center of an animated conversation about save percentages and the Western Conference standings, and which is better, pumpkin or apple pie, I can't help but smile. I'm happy for her. She once admitted to me she didn't have many friends during one of those late-night post-sex conversations. You know, the kind where you can really let your guard down. While she opened up, her voice was soft, almost as though she was letting me in on a dark secret. And maybe she was, because I was sure as hell shocked to hear she felt that way. Everyone who meets Eden loves her, and most probably think she's out of their league. I couldn't figure out why she'd struggle to make friends, because she's friendly, open, bright, and articulate. But seeing her here now, surrounded by a loud team of hockey players and her staff, it's obvious she's found her tribe. This crew would do just about anything for her. Maybe she was just waiting for her people, and now she's found them. We would be here for her through thick or thin, through exciting wins or bitter losses. We'd see her through her bullies and critics, and definitely be there to celebrate with her in the good times. Like this one. Because for as much as I complained about today, there's a lot to be thankful for. Eden's mother came back to the U.S. for the holidays, which I think secretly pleased Eden. And by some miracle, my mom is actually getting along with her mom. Eden laughs at something Saint has said. And then she looks at me, flashing me the most brilliant smile that sends a jolt straight through my chest. It's then that I know I'm so damn lucky to be the guy by her side. It's a place I'll gladly stay for all of eternity, next to her, letting her take the spotlight and shine like the star she is. Because it doesn't get much better than this. A beautiful woman who loves me, plenty of pie, a totally burned turkey, and a bunch of rowdy hockey players reciting horrible poetry.
Epilogue. Eden.
The only thing better than Thanksgiving dinner is the long, turkey-induced night's sleep afterward. When I blink awake in the morning, 9 full hours of shut-eye later, I feel as though I'm waking up from a coma, more rested than I've felt since the hockey season began. I guess that's what a full belly, a night with friends, and the perfect bedmate does for you. When I sit up to check the time, the big, burly man next to me grumbles, pulling me closer to him like I'm his favorite teddy bear. "Morning," I murmur, snuggling closer into Holt's broad chest. His body is warm and solid against mine, one arm draped protectively over me.
Nope.
His voice is hoarse with sleep, and he buries his face in my hair.
I reject that. It's still nighttime.
I think the sun says otherwise, I chuckle, allowing just enough space between us for me to roll over and face him. The tips of our noses brush against each other, which brings a slight sleepy smile to his lips, even though his eyes remain closed. I don't think I've ever seen him this peaceful, this content. Rise and shine, baby, I say, squeezing his hip. We need to get on the road soon. It's rare that we both have a day off, so we decided to make the most of our long holiday weekend and book a getaway to the Cape. We picked out the cutest little family-owned inn for our stay, and this afternoon I'm surprising him with a private whale-watching excursion out of Provincetown. In just a few hours, we'll be bundled up in the back of our own private charter boat, watching the waves through sets of binoculars. That is, so long as I can get Holt up and moving in time. Luckily, I know how to wake him up in a hurry. Come on, sleepyhead, I murmur, guiding my hand along the front of his boxer briefs. His body jerks in response, and he instantly stiffens beneath my touch, just as I hoped.
Yeah?
His gray eyes flutter open, already dark with need as he touches his lips softly to mine. One hand floats up to my jaw, and when he kisses me again, we're suddenly both wide awake. He plants a trail of lazy, open-mouthed kisses along my neck and down my collarbone, while I fist my hand around his shaft through the cotton of his boxer briefs. He sucks in a breath through his teeth, pushing his hips against my rhythm. And then, in a moment of pure bad timing, my phone buzzes on the nightstand. I try to ignore it, keeping my grip on his length, but then it buzzes again. I'm getting a call. With a sigh of defeat, I slip out of Holt's arms, reaching for my phone. It's Coach Wilder. I have to take this. I scramble out of bed and lunge for my robe, making myself feel decent enough for a work call, then wedge the phone between my ear and shoulder. Hello?
Eden.
Wild sighs, sounding relieved.
Thank God you picked up. I didn't wake you up, did I?
No, you didn't. I grumble, because technically that's the truth, although his call is certainly an unwanted interruption.
Good. Any chance you've heard from Braun recently?
My brows scrunch together at the mention of my ex, and Holt definitely notices. He sits up in bed, arching one thick brow at me. I mouth the words, "It's fine," before slipping out to the kitchen. Something about discussing an ex in my bedroom, even in a professional capacity, feels wrong, especially when my boyfriend is half naked and probably still hard between my sheets. I haven't spoken to him in weeks, I say to Coach once I'm safely in the kitchen, leaning up against the island and chewing on a hangnail. Other than a word or two at practices, why do you ask? A low, frustrated noise comes over the line.
I really hate to involve you in this, Eden, but we might have a bit of a problem.
What kind of a problem?
An Alex is missing kind of a problem. He wasn't at practice on Wednesday, and he skipped morning skate today. It's not like him.
My stomach squeezes into a tight knot. Coach is right. That isn't like Alex. In all the years I've known him, he's never let anything stand between him and his hockey career. If he's skipping practice, he must either be as sick as a dog or in a ditch somewhere. And the man may have broken my heart, but I don't wish either of those things upon him. especially not the second one. I promise Coach that I'll do what I can to help the situation, although I'm not entirely sure what that entails. Then end the call with a huff, leaning heavily against the kitchen counter. Holt and I need to be on the road in an hour if we're going to stick to our plans. How much can I get done in an hour? I suppose we could go to Alex's apartment and check on him before we leave town, but that feels all kinds of awkward. I tap on my phone screen, pulling up my contacts. If ever there was a time to delegate, it's now. Moments later, I'm on the phone with Aspen, interrupting what's supposed to be her day off, too. I'm so sorry to do this to you, but will you go check on Alex? He's not showing up to practice, and Coach is worried. Sure thing. When Aspen agrees cheerily, I make a mental note to double the holiday bonus we budgeted to give her. Just as we're finishing up our call, two big, warm arms encircle my waist, and I instantly feel at ease.
Everything okay?
Holt asks once I've hung up, leaning over to press a kiss onto my cheekbone. I'm not sure. Coach is worried about Alex. He's been missing from some practices lately.
Sounds serious.
Holt replies with a grunt, which is really the most sympathy I could ask from him on topics pertaining to Alex. He knows that my involvement with my ex starts and ends with his work on the ice. But when he's not showing up to do that work, we have a problem. It might be serious, I say, grabbing Holt's big hands and pulling his arms tighter around me. Or he might just be throwing some kind of temper tantrum. Either way, I've got Aspen taking care of it. You and I have other plans this weekend.
We sure do, baby. I'm proud of you.
He hums against my neck, his curious hands wandering down my hips.
Now, where were we earlier this morning?
Before I can respond, I feel my feet lift up from the tile, and soon I'm slung over Holt's shoulder, squealing and kicking my feet as he carries me back to bed. We have to leave soon, I say with a laugh as my head hits the pillow, but Holt just shakes his head, smiling and pulling the tie on my robe loose like he's unwrapping an early Christmas present.
We've got all sorts of time,
he says to assure me. And in my heart, I know he's right. We have all the time in the world. Because a man like Holt only comes around once in a lifetime. Twice, if you're lucky like me. And now that I've found him, I'm never letting him go. Thank you for listening. Up next in this series is The Rival, Alex's story. For more information, visit KendallRyanBooks.com.
This has been The Rebel, Looking to Score Book 1. Written by Kendall Ryan. Narrated by Jason Clark and Vanessa Edwin. Copyright 2021 by Kendall Ryan. Production copyright 2021 by Kendall Ryan. Production coordination by Lyric Audiobooks. Producer Katie Robinson. Post-production by Anansi Audio. Vanessa Edwin and Jason Clark are members of SAG-AFTRA. To keep up with new releases, visit KendallRyanBooks.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.